Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. I am hosting or co-hosting today's Locked On Pacers podcast for my weekly tradition, bringing on with my co-host from 8.9 Seconds, Tony East. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm good, Adam. I'm sitting here with my Chuck Person bobblehead, feeling a little odd sitting next to the Chuck Person bobblehead after his news this week.
I have a same bobblehead. I think we might have gone to the same game without knowing it. Yeah, you know, that's that whole NCAA thing. I know we're not a NCAA podcast, but just what's going on with the pay for play. And I mean, you said it when I talked to you earlier this week or earlier today, even that you were like, it's going to disrupt the NCAA basically, right?
Yeah, we got to try to not say too off topic of the NBA and Pacers here, but it's going to be bad, I think. And it might end up hurting the NBA's product for a year or two just because these guys won't really have a place to play.
Yes,
potentially.
So then I'll make an NBA relevant. Just we'll go for 2 minutes on this. Do you think this problem is that players can't go from 18 to the pros? Is that why you think it's an issue, or it's just an issue because it's just college basketball is kind of seedy?
Well, Nate Duncan on his podcast said it the best to me. It's like there's like a black market for these players basically because they bring in more value than they're costing schools. So that's where all this money is coming in from. And to me, one and done is like the cause of this because – like they're already good enough to be in the NBA, and then the NBA is literally an association for professional basketball players, but these guys aren't allowed to join for some stupid reason of their age. So the black market was created, and now all these people are going to get arrested for trying to make money off of people who make money, basically.
Yeah, and the point of they're worth more of their value than you said is perfect. Like, people complain, these college players shouldn't get paid because they get a great education, whatever, but like, they're clearly worth more to these schools than the education value. If schools are willing to pay them $100,000 to come, or shoe companies are because they know the value of their brand being shown in all these tournament games. So clearly, either some of these top basketball stars in college either need to be in the NBA where they can make real money, or they need to get paid in college, because this is what happens when you have an undervalued. You can get so much value out of an asset for free that you're willing to pay more. So,
yeah, and I'm not even advocating for colleges to pay them per se, just that like they should be able to get paid from endorsements and things like that, just because it's stupid that they're worth more than their name and they can't get any money for it.
Yeah, no, the likeness thing. I agree with that. I'm not a fan before like straight give them cash, but I'm straight for let them have their likenesses. Let them get paid by a shoe company for their 1 year in college. Like, you know, LeBron was going to be a Nike guy for his entire life. He went to college or not. Let him get paid by Nike to go to college for a year or two. And maybe he'll stay for more than 1 year in college because he's making enough income to be like, oh, let's stay in college and build kind of a brand here where I get more exposure than my first year in the NBA.
Or just get rid of one and done so that the best players can play in the league that will develop them the best right away.
Yeah, that's tricky just because – I guess the D League now has helped players develop, but there are so many players that go straight from 18 to the pros. It just shouldn't. They just shouldn't. I mean, there's always the exception of KG and LeBron and Kobe, but there's for every one of those, there's like a Jonathan Bender, the guy, the former Pacer that went 18 to pro. You know, it's dicey in my opinion.
It is. It totally is. But it's hard to say if the college system is truly working. I mean, there's clearly flaws with it. Shout out to Chuck. So. But yeah. I think we talked enough about this.
Yeah, we did. I just thought it's funny how you have it. I have a Chuck Person bobblehead too. I made the connection, but I didn't really make the connection that like, oh yeah, he got arrested as part of the whole thing. But so we should move on to a more important Pacer topic, and that is Glenn Robinson. Glenn Robinson went down in practice earlier this week. At first, I was worried that it was going to be it's a serious injury, but it would be like a season-ending injury. You know, he got carted off. There was like a worry. You know, lots of rumors going around, whatever. But then ends up, he has a very badly sprained ankle, which isn't great, but he's only going to miss 2 months, they say, which is not, which is the best scenario and a bad scenario, how I want to put it, because he'll be, hopefully he'll be back by then. That means December, January range, you know, 2 months. I'm skeptical of injuries after what happened with the Colts, Andrew Luck. I don't believe any timeline of injuries anymore, but so, but still, if he's back by January, he'll get to play 40, 50 games, give or take. So at least get a good season under his belt, because it is a contract year for him and whatnot. So Tony, how do they replace Glenn Robinson for those 30 games, let's say?
Well, I think a more important thing to say, first of all, is if it is really an 8-week injury, like you said, we are lucky that 2.5 of those weeks are coming before the season starts. So really it's only 5.5 weeks of the season. So you might only miss like 30 games, or maybe even a little less if he can recover quickly. But like you said, indie sports seem to always misjudge the healing time of their players. But yeah, it's going to be really tough. I mean, I think the plan was always either to have him eventually supplant Bogdanovich in the starting lineup, or just have them both play even minutes every night, somewhere around 24 of the three. So now there's a void of, you know, 20 to 25 minutes at backup wing that are up for grabs. And the I think a lot of the first responders on Twitter said, you know, we got to plug Lance in there, but Lance was being talked about being the sixth man earlier this week, and I know we're going to talk about that later, but I mean, you can't really plug him in there and then still have the same, you know, guard rotation. So it's going to be a tough plug to have.
Yeah. I think what's going to have to be the short term of Bogdanovich playing more minutes than we thought he was going to play. You know, I thought he was going to play like 26 split minutes evenly almost with Glenn Robinson, but now I think Bogdanovich might get up to 30 minutes a game to 35, even close. I mean, he's going to have to take on a bigger load for the season, and then you have to supplement it. You know, Lance is going to have to play 25 minutes a game probably at the backup shooting guard or backup small forward positions, or, you know, for the entire game. So that'll be interesting to see. I think a worry, though, with me is that Glenn Robinson is in a contract here, right? He's a restricted or unrestricted free agent. At the end of this season, he is due for a decent contract. He had a good decent season last season. He continued on the same path and put up a good year this year. He'd be in line for a $10 or $12 million contract over 3 or 4 years, which worries me that he might want to rush himself back to get in, you know, to try to go after that contract when he should take as much time as possible, especially with a team like this where they're not competing for a championship, and getting healthy is more important than playing right away.
Well, you just kind of nailed the Pacers' thought process of, you know, let's get him back slow and give him a low minutes load and maybe kind of depress his value, so come free agency next year, they can kind of get him a little cheaper. And it's wrong to think in an injury of, like, the positive is that he gets less money. That's just awful thinking. But that's what the team's going to probably be thinking, just because they have to think of some bright side of this. But, you know, it's going to be hard because Glenn's going to want to come back as soon as possible, and the team and the doctors are going to try to not make him come back as soon as possible.
Yeah, I actually don't know if it depresses contract value if he only plays, let's say, 40 games. Because if he comes back like 100% healthy and plays like 20, like the last 20, 25 games really well, kind of like a Solomon Hill type did, there's going to be money out there for him. So I just think his – Pacers have to say, listen, if you play 40 games and you're 100 healthy, you'll still get the same money that you'd get if you played 60 games. But if you're not healthy, you're going to kind of lower your value. So you should kind of wait until you're 100% healthy until you can play your best, because – you know, if you can put up 40 solid games, you're going to get a nice contract still, because he's 23 years old. He's young. He's extremely talented. I mean, and every time you think about him, he brings up memories of his father sometimes, who was a great NBA player. So I don't know if I still agree with your point that bringing him back slow and playing less minutes is going to depress his value in the long run, because if he plays 20 or 30 good games, he's going to get a nice contract.
Understandable, but at the same time, he's super reliant on his athleticism, hence like he won the dunk contest, and like an ankle injury really could hurt that. And even if he does come back and he's ready to go, I mean, he's going to see a decline in his athleticism just from not running around and jumping and practicing all the time.
Yeah. And I don't know how he hurt the ankle specifically. I don't think that was actually released. I don't know if it was like he fell on somebody's foot or whatnot. I mean, it's kind of a mystery out there, but the one good thing is it's ankle, not a foot. Hurting your foot is hugely hard to come back for in the NBA. You know what I mean? It's extremely hard. I mean, Kevin Durant did it, but it took him like 3 years from his original foot injury to finally get 100% healthy. And he still missed a good amount of time this season with his foot, another injury. But so an ankle is not as bad as that. So he should get some athleticism back, because he should be able to build on his once the swelling goes down in a month or so, I guess he should be able to build on that. Doesn't need surgery. So that's another positive that should help him come back quicker. And, you know, he just has to take a playbook out of, or a page out of the playbook of Paul George, really. I know we don't need to talk about him, but, you know, Paul George just broke his leg in half, but he slowly came back. He got back to his health, and now he's back to where he was pre-injury. So that's kind of the path I think Larson needs to follow.
Yeah, I agree. You know, no matter how long that takes, that's got to be the path, because he's probably the second or third most important player for the future of the team. So having him at full health is very important. But now we wanted to talk about this earlier, the problem is replacing the minutes that he had.
Yeah, so you have an interesting theory. I personally think what's going to happen is Lance will just end up playing more minutes than we thought from the start. I think we both thought of him as a 12 to 20 minute guy. He might not be a 20 to 30 minute guy, just playing constant backup to shooting guard and small forward while Joseph plays the backup point guard, and he won't get any Lance experiments. But you have a different guy you think should replace Robinson.
Well, what I think will happen is what you've just said, is that Lance will kind of play more 2-3 hybrid wing, and then maybe I decide to say this, Damian Wilkins gets a little run of like 5 to 10 minutes at the two, and those minutes that Stevenson would have had. And then, but what I would like to see is maybe give TJ Leaf a little run on the wing, see how he can do as a shooter, because you already said it earlier that Bogdanovich is probably going to be playing now like 30 or 35 minutes a game, right? And if he's like a slight net positive guy, and you have Leaf playing, what, 10 minutes at the three? If he's a net negative, that's okay. Him and Bogdanovich can even out even just because he'll be playing such few minutes there. And yeah. I'd like to see the development going at various positions.
And I actually don't mind that idea. I think there's an interesting lineup you could try with Turner, Sabonis, and Leaf. It might be a little bit weird at first because there's a lot of new people right there. But that's kind of the future the Pacers want to have, right? Their futures, if you're thinking 3 years down the road for the Pacers, you're thinking some point guard they drafted in the next two seasons, Oladipo, Leaf, Sabonis, and Turner. That was the idea. That's an ideal situation. Well, and Glenn, you're right, and Glenn in there. So maybe Leaf not as a small forward, but yeah, that's kind of the idea. Maybe it's Oladipo shifts to point guard, and then you have Glenn shooting guard, Leaf. You know, if Leaf can play the three in some sense, it would kind of game change the way the trajectory of this Pacers team, because you would have an extremely tall lineup in there, kind of like they used to have with their old early 2010 team. That was a different team because it wasn't as fast, but that'd be an interesting spread it out kind of tall, lots of threes, lots of length kind of team. So,
yeah, but it's impossible to say. That's what I would personally advocate for, but I totally understand why they wouldn't do that if they don't, just because he's going to be not good to be nice about it. I will say one positive spin for the reserve guys is all the guys they have in for training camp. So McKinney Jones, Daquan Jones, Ben Moore, Poitras, and Damian Wilkins are all kind of wing hybrid guys in various ways. So in a way, you could expect that all of them could plug into that position to a degree. And the fact that Poitras is on a two-way could be perfect, that they use his 45 days of two-way contract to plug him in at the three Robinson's minutes during his injury.
Yeah, you know, any of those guys, I mean, same thing with Leaf because he's young, but any of those guys they bring in are just not going to have the same type of skill set or just play the same level Helding Robinson does, but it might be a serviceable replacement. I just think at the end of the day, like we said from the start, Stevenson is probably the best player with the best chance to replace him, just because I'm not sure Poitras is that good of an NBA player and can really play more than 10 minutes.
That's the thing though, is Poitras might be a better quote NBA player right now than TJ Leaf. Like, definitely not in the long run. That's not the plan, but right now he might be, right? He's got experience in the pros and in the D League.
Yeah, and it also comes down to what we've been trying to solve the whole offseason. Are the Pacers going for the wins, 35 wins, or are they going for development of players?
Right.
If you're going for development, play TJ Leaf. It's not going to hurt. You know, you lose games, whatever. TJ Leaf gets to play some minutes, you know, get some good big-time minutes. It's good for his development long-term. But if not, if you're trying to get 35 wins and make the playoffs, then you might go with Poitras because he's a safer bet for 10 minutes a game than TJ Leaf.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough line to toe. And I think the last thing you could look at is maybe looking to make that Thad Young trade happen a little earlier and see if you can get a wing for him. But that's kind of too much guessing involved to say who would actually be the recipient there or what kind of team that could happen.
Yeah, and I think that's actually kind of a waste, to be honest. I think for a wing player is a waste. Thad Young is a draft pick. You can get a first-round pick for him. You take it at some point because of his contract. But you don't want to waste him on a wing player that you're going to use for 20, 30 games for a team that's not going to win more than 35 games. It's just like
– No, I agree.
Like, if this was a Pacers
like 2 years – some crappy salary wing kind of guy and a late first just to get off some money for Thad, I'd be okay with that. You could plug up some minutes nicely.
Yeah, and I don't think you do that this early in the season. It's just it's an unfortunate injury happened so early because it kind of throws off how you because you kind of want to go into training camp and figure out your team and figure out who play well together. And you're not gonna be able to figure that out with Robinson, basically, which is gonna hurt them probably in the long run because they'll have to take 10 or 15 games to adjust to this whole new team. So, but I think it's just I don't really know who they would trade, how it'd work, and if it even could work this time of year because the teams are not looking to make moves in October. You know, if this injury happened in December, you can make a move, but right now I'm not sure any team is looking to make any huge moves.
Right. You know, it's totally a challenge. I was just spitballing an idea of ways to get a replacement elsewhere if you don't want to sign someone or anything. Because, like, you also have to look like Matt Barnes is a free agent. And, I mean, he'd be better than any option they would have right now that they could bring in. But the problem is then that, you know, a younger guy wouldn't make the team from training camp. So I get why they wouldn't want to do that. Plus, he's had tons of off-court problems.
Yeah. You know, it's a tough situation for the Pacers. It just really is. And so, you know, I feel bad just for Glenn Robinson. I feel bad for the way it happened because we were getting kind of high hopes on him. Just so everybody out there knows, there's going to actually be a Glenn Robinson preview podcast this week on Locked On Pacers Network. It's our last player preview, and it'll be on Thursday. Glenn Robinson, we haven't recorded yet because we were waiting to see if something has happened, which is, I guess, we lucked out that we didn't record it yet because now we have to talk about his injury and how that, instead of just talking about, you know, his potential for the season. But for now, I now want to move on to
– wait, can I add one more thing?
Go ahead.
I think another reason it's such a challenging injury is something you said about 2 or 3 minutes ago that we could throw in there, is that we don't really know what the Pacers season is going to be between are they trying to compete or are they trying to develop their young players. But the problem with the Robinson injury is he would be playing a lot in both scenarios, right? So you either path you choose now is hurt by this injury. That's what makes it so devastating.
That's a great point because, yeah, no matter what way direction we're going, if they were trying to play young guys, he was going to play more minutes. If they were trying to win games, he was going to play big minutes because he was going to be a big part of the team, like, no matter what.
Yeah, so that's tough. But, you know, we'll have to see how they handle it. We don't really know what the plan is until they choose the bottom of the roster, guys. So we'll have to see, but we can move on now. I just wanted to include that.
Yeah. So I wanted to move on. So the NBA released their new lottery reform. Basically what they did is they evened out the odds at the top of the draft. I think it's like 14% now for the top three teams. It's sort of to discourage teams from being the worst team because it's not, your odds are less if you just go completely all out tank. But I don't really know if it solves any of the problems. It just sort of makes it an incentive to be one of the three worst teams. So just, you know, so right now, basically what it is 14% for the top three, 12.5% for team four, 10% for team five. And then, so it's a little bit more flat odds than it was before. But, you know, this will be affecting a team like the Pacers because, I mean, I don't know if they're a bottom three team, but there might be a bottom five team in the NBA. They could be at least this year. You know, I've been slowly talked in thanks to the media day hype that they could be better than that. But theoretically, they could be a bottom five team, which could give them about a 10% chance of having the first pick and like a 30% chance of having a top three pick. So I don't know, Tommy, what are your thoughts on this lottery reform? We've talked about this before, but I want to get your thoughts on now it's been officially set.
Well, this is okay to me just because it doesn't do anything. Like, the NBA thinks this is going to do something, but this new system kind of doesn't do anything. It doesn't change anything in, like, the 10 to 14 range hardly at all, and it changes a lot in, like, the 1 to 8 range. But now you're just going to be tanking to get top three instead of top one. Like, they're just moving the tanking, which that's what's going to happen no matter what the proposal is. So it's really hard to say what the answer is. But in general, I think, you know, the concept, if you say it on paper, looks pretty good. You know, now the teams in the 1 through 5 pick, their expected pick fell down a little bit, where the teams 7 through 14 all improved their expected pick by a little bit. So in theory, that is what they wanted.
And yeah, I just want to make it known, the lottery reform doesn't go in effect till the following season. That means this season the odds are still the same.
Right.
So it doesn't affect any of this season. So I was talking about this season, and that was wrong. So actually, I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast earlier this week, and he called this lottery fix as a way to try to get rid of hinkyism. So I thought
it totally is. That's how I started my article when I wrote about it. Was this is a completely 100% reactionary thing to Sam Hinkie,
which I don't think it solves any of the actual issues that are underlying, because teams still have an incentive to be one of the five worst teams. It just makes it easier if you're one of the bottom five teams to get a top pick, because at the end of the day, right, NBA is so reliant on one player. If you have one great player, your whole hopes and dreams change. Great example, Oklahoma City. I mean, they had Russell Westbrook, and all of a sudden they could bring in a guy like Paul George and a guy like Carmelo and wanted to go play there. You know, you give one great player and everything changes for your team. But So it's not going to, I don't know if this solves that issue. You know, there are so many issues that the draft is part of. I heard Stan Van Gundy say, let them all be free agents, but that won't work because they'll just cluster around New York, LA, Miami, Texas, basically. That's where those are the bigger cities like Dallas. But, you know, there's probably a better reform out there than this, but it probably doesn't help bad teams get good faster, though.
Yeah, and you heard me complain about lottery reform the most, so I will say with this proposal, it doesn't hurt anything, you know? Like, compared to where we are now, this isn't worse, and it's not going to change so much because there's no incentive to tank out of the playoffs now. So, like, this is fine to me, but I just don't see the point at all. And they're still going to be tanking, and it's so reactionary, and I just don't like it when they set this precedent that, like, if you try to build your team in a certain way, they're going to stop you.
Yeah, so it depends. I know I think I was right. You think lottery reform is – you don't think lottery should try to help teams that are already good because the goal of the lottery is to help bad teams be good again. But the ideal way, I think, really to do this is you want to incentivize teams to go to be the 10th to 14th worst team in the league, right? You want to incentivize teams to end up getting into the 8 spots or something like that. Like, that's the goal of this, because if not, you get kind of bad games, you know. A great example is you see with football now is there's like 3 or 4 just teams that aren't trying to win games. It just kind of ruins the product for a bunch of games every Sunday. It's the thing in the NBA. You know, if you have 5 teams not trying, it ruins that product basically, and people don't want to go to those games when the team comes to town and whatnot. So you have to find a way to incentivize a team to basically shoot for the 7th seed. That's like the incentive should be. But if you do that, then you get these teams perpetually stuck at being bad. So I don't know how you solve that.
Yeah, and it's been talked about, like, have the lottery be every team outside the top 8 teams. So, like, some playoff teams are still a part of the lottery. Not sure how much that'll help, but it's not a terrible idea on paper. Nate Duncan tweeted at me, actually, that his idea is that if you have cap space, you can cut into some of your cap space and use it to move up in the draft. And I actually like that a lot, kind of combine 2 team-building aspects into one. And so teams that are over the cap can't move up in the draft no matter what. You know, there's a lot of ideas, and this is fine. Me, this is just fine.
Yeah, so I just want to give one theory, which I don't know if this would work or not, but so what if you change the odds to basically make it 1 through 18? So you have to be the 2 7 seeds, the 2 8 seeds, and then you sort of flatten out the odds so that if you were the 18th, 17th, 16th, 15th, or 14th, or 13th, you know, that way you had, like, even it's like a 5% chance, you know, everybody gets 5 in the bottom 5 teams, or, you know, everybody gets a little bit 10% more. And then you also have to get rid of max contracts in some sense, because I think part of the underlying issue of this whole thing is that you don't want players making super teams. And if you get rid of max contracts, you prevent players from leaving these smaller markets, which is the whole reason we have lottery reform, is because there's a fear if you don't let bad teams in small markets get high picks, no good players will go there. So, you know, there's some combination, I think, in there of where you can incentivize the team to get for the 7 seed, and if you pay the best players more than they should get, like, pay them instead of depressing their value, giving them mass contracts, there's kind of a way to, like, make this lottery system work. But I think there's so more issues to come off of it at the same time. So,
well, Zach Lowe agreed with you in his article, because he said basically if you want teams to be able to get stars in other ways instead of the draft, get rid of the max contracts. Like you just said, like, if the Orlando Magic want to offer Ben Simmons like $70 million in a couple of years, let him do it. Like, who cares?
Well, yeah, and the Pacers are a great example, because they're gonna have $60 million in cap space next year. Yeah. And so, like, but, you know, a guy like Isaiah Thomas wouldn't think about going to the Pacers probably, but if they offer him $45 million, he might. Like, you know, it just, the max contract is there because it helps every other player get played, and they're in a union. So that's kind of the way why it's there, I think. But because if not, you would see a team like the Cavs, let's say they have $120 million, whatever, 75 would go to LeBron, and then they pay everybody else 5. Like, that's how it would go in the league. So each change creates more problems. This one does the least disruption to the current system. So it doesn't change.
Exactly. That's why I'm fine with it, because there's going to be very, very, very little ripple effects from this going forward.
Yeah, I just think that somehow you have to figure out, either maybe through compensation picks or whatever, how to incentivize teams that are consistently trying to win 30 or more games. I mean, I understand, you know, even the best put together team can't always make the playoffs. But, like, if you're just trying to win 30 games, it means you're actually trying this season. You're not, like, you're not tanking. You're not whatever. You know, it's the teams that win 15 to 20, the 20 that, you know, are just tanking.
Right, the Sixers won less than 20 games 3 years in a row, and that was just so embarrassing for the league. And I know that's why they tried to change it the first time, even though it didn't actually work. But you know, that's why it's happening, and that's where we are now. But I think we now should talk about how it relates to the Pacers, if you'll let me.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I haven't tied it back in.
No, that's okay. I actually think this is pretty nice for the Pacers. I wrote about this. So since their last time they picked in the top 10 was 1989, the year before they picked Rick Smits, and then in 1989, I forget who they drafted, but they just don't ever pick in the top 10. They always try to do well. But this could work well for them just because it helps those teams that finish in like the seventh worst to 12th worst record range get a better pick. So, you know, that's looking like they're where they're trending for the next couple of years. So maybe it could help them move up in the lottery one of these years.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be a lottery team past maybe this and next year is only my only worry. Because I think this was the year where that like you could justify, hey, let's win 20 games and get a first pick. Because if they're on the projection where Oladipo and Turner improve, they should be a playoff team in 2 years, give or take.
For sure.
So, sure. You know, this may not affect them in the long run because I think, you know, the next 3 or 4 years, I don't think they're going to be blowing your doors off of, you know, getting a top 4 seed in the East. But I have expectations that in 2 or 3 years, they should be, you know, consistently a 7 or 6 seed like they were the past couple of years. The East has gotten so much worse too. So it's not like, you know, I know they've gotten worse without Paul George, but the East has kind of dropped down to their level at the same time because there's like, maybe 2 top 25 players in the East or 3, you know, you say Hayward, Kyrie, and LeBron. So, you know, it's interesting to see what's going to happen. I agree with you, though. In the long run, this should help a team like the Pacers just because if they want to tank, they don't have to get the worst. They don't have to be the worst tanking team to still get a good pick.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you're right. They'll probably try to be succeeding in 3 years from now. So maybe it won't help them besides just the 2019 draft. But in the short term, at least, it looks like the very first year this will be instated, it will actually help them, which is good.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe in 2 years when they are this bad and they get the first pick because they have the third worst record but the same odds, we'll be joyous they made this type of thing and we'll be all happy when we draft. I don't know who the best player in 2 years is, but whoever it is, we draft that guy. So it might work out. You know, the Pacers have never had the first pick in the draft, so it'll be interesting to see if this helps a team like that get it.
Yeah, it does sound like it'll kind of help them, you know, stay afloat and still get the pick that they want. And it'll, you know, create some competitive balance in the NBA, which is exactly what the point of them doing this was. Well, not create some, but create more competitive balance in the NBA, which is exactly what they want this to do.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, I'm still skeptical that this leads to teams not wanting to tank, but, you know, we'll see what happens with it. I think we've exhausted the lottery reform discussion. You know, it's not a super relevant to the Pacers, but it could be. It could be very relevant to the Pacers, so that's why we wanted to talk about it. I want to move on to our last topic, Media Day. But before we do our last topic, I want to do a quick commercial break for our sponsor, SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Tony, have you decided what Pacers game you're going to yet this year?
I just bought my tickets for opening night to see them play the Nets.
So. Did you use SeatGeek? I don't want to – if you didn't
– I did use SeatGeek. So here's the challenge. I was going to tell this story in an ad read I did this week, but I'll tell you. The preseason game does not have tickets on SeatGeek, which is a challenge. The first regular season game does have tickets on SeatGeek. So I used it to go to that game and get my money back by using our code.
Oh, nice. So I'm assuming it's probably because the preseason games don't sell out, so you can just buy from the box office directly, maybe?
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly it.
Okay. So, I mean, that's not SeatGeek's fault. That's just what's going on with a preseason basketball game besides people like even me. You know, there are some out there. There are 1,500 people like us at least that love Pacers so much that listen to this podcast every week, which is awesome. But so SeatGeek is the, like Tony said, is you can use the promo code LOMBA. He used it to get a discount on your tickets. And just remember that SeatGeek is like basically one of the best ticket buying sites around because it tells you the fees in price. So you don't have to get surprised when you go to checkout. And they also have a great way of telling you if you're getting a good deal or not. So did you get a good deal on your tickets?
I did. It was in the green dots.
Do you remember the number on it?
81, 82.
So yeah, that's a good deal. You know, most of the time they're in the 80s. You're not getting a good deal if it's in the 80s. So
currently the top number is 81. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So clearly Tony knows what he's doing. If Tony can figure out how to use SeatGeek, I'm telling you, anybody else out there can. That's a joke. Tony's very technologically savvy, but he had never used SeatGeek before. So if he never used it before and finally used it this time and I'm sure all you guys knew about this. Remember to use the promo code LMBA and you get a nice, I think, a $20 discount off your first purchase.
We don't say this in ad reads, but I want to because I like this a lot too. There's a little feature you can click and you can type in your email on SeatGeek, and if the prices drop at any time before the game and after you type in your email, it'll email you that the price has dropped and there's a better ticket available.
Oh, I've actually never used that feature before, but that might be new this year, or I don't know what it is. That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, actually.
It's a great idea.
Because most of the time when I'm going to a Pacers game, I like just pick the day I want to go, and I just kind of keep waiting around until about 6 before the game and buy a ticket right before the game, you know, as I'm driving there almost.
Right, because I'm looking at it right now, and, you know, so like the best ticket grade's an 81, but if I typed in my email, it would email me if they beat 81. So that's really cool. You guys should really check out SeatGeek. It's great.
Yeah, if you're going to go to Pacers games this year, which they're actually going to be pretty affordable too, because I'm sure – is a little bit worried if the team might not be that good. So you can get a really good decon seat for some actually really good seats too. You can probably get lower level seats for a decent price on SeatGeek. Yes, so remember to use the promo code LOMBA on your first purchase. And now back to the regular podcast. So media day happened this week. I'm not going to go too heart.
Everyone on the Pacers is in the best shape of their life, and everyone on the Pacers has an amazing 3-point stroke now. Every single player.
Yeah, so this is the thing about media day, is every team, you go around to all 30 teams, you're going to get a story about how the team's going to overachieve what its projections are. You know, you may not get a playoff. Everybody's going to make the playoff, but you're going to get, like, you go to the Nets, for example, they're going to say, oh, D'Angelo Russell looks great. He's going to have a great season. He's going to change the direction of this team. That's probably what's storyline. I haven't even read about the Nets, but I'm sure that was a storyline. Go to a team like the Warriors, it's like, this team can win 75 games. I'm sure that was a storyline. I'm sure if you go to Cleveland, it's Isaiah is going to work really well with LeBron. They like the way it's going to go. There's just all, you know, media day is like the biggest overhype fest thing on the planet. It's kind of the way training camp can be sometimes for the NFL. When you go into it, it's such an overhype of how good teams are going to be, because there's these teams have spent months preparing what they're going to say, and it's all just soundbited out. And it's ridiculous what happened at media day, but also it's because as NBA fans, we're starving for this NBA news. And yes, we got a more 12-month NBA, but as Pacers fans, we've been starving for news since basically the end of July, and we're finally getting some news. So it's why the media writes about it.
Yeah. I did like, Nate McMillan was pretty, you know, on the record, just saying things that he expected to see with the team and how he was going to coach, you know, and that's not the kind of stuff that is bullish to me. That's actually relevant information. And you know, the big one, we kind of touched on it earlier, was sixth man Lance. And I know you and Caitlin talked about it, but, you know, that was pretty cool to hear that they had a plan to use Lance in a way that I for one, did not see them doing.
Yeah, the sixth man thing is, I think, so I wrote about this and I should have posted yesterday. I think it's a little bit of this sort of trying to push Lance to be accepting of his role as a bench player. Because I think if there's one thing we could say about Lance, it's that we think he thinks he's better than he is. It's kind of the Dion Waiters. I mean, that's no knock on Lance, because Lance has had a really good season at one point. I mean, he's but like Dion Waiters has some of that. You know, when Dion Waiters played next to Kevin Durant and LeBron, he thought he should have the ball every time. There's great, you should go out there and type it in, Dion Waiters calls for a ball when LeBron drives it up. Like, you see Dion Waiters just sitting in the corner, like, pass me the ball, yelling at LeBron, when, like, no, LeBron's not going to pass you the ball in the shot clock, Dion. LeBron's going to shoot this because he's the best player on the planet. But, so, I think that's part of it. Stevenson probably thinks he should be a starting shooting guard, but the Pacers know he shouldn't. They're trying to kind of get him motivated. So, maybe the idea of talking about as the man of Ginobili is a little bit motivating factor.
Yeah, and I get where you can see the comparison, that kind of creation specialist off the bench who's like okay on offense and pretty good on defense. And it's definitely, I think you're right, it's more motivating for Lance than what they actually expect to happen. But at the same time, you know, it's cool to know that they're actually going to try that, because he does kind of make sense as a sixth man, because shot creation off the bench is going to be a little tough to find.
Yeah, and now especially that Glenn Robinson got hurt, he's definitely going to be the sixth man. I was making an argument that Glenn Robinson should be the sixth man of the Pacers. But, you know, Steve's is going to have to step into Glenn Robinson's role. So he's going to have to be the true sixth man for at least the first 30 games. And we talked about earlier. So, you know, he's going to end up being the utility man for the entire team. At the end of the day, he's going to be the guy that basically anytime someone gets hurt, he plays more minutes and he steps into playing anywhere from point guard to small forward at all times.
Yeah, and that's kind of – well, the problem will be now that they need him at small forward because of the Glenn injury, but at some point I would like to see him at the backup two guard, you know. And I think the fact that he can play so many positions will allow him, like you just said, to, you know, step in fluidly to any position off the bench, and that could make him a good sixth man. and he can play next to Corey Joseph just fine. So that's probably the guy he'll be playing the most with on the team. So that's I think that's a good role for him.
Yeah, and actually, so Caitlin brought this up, that Stephenson has this ability to not be motivated when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. So that's why she thinks he'll be a point, kind of a point guardish type of, you know, play a lot of point guard minutes. So I think that plays into the same kind of reason they hyped him up as a sixth man, was that when he doesn't feel like he's involved in the team, he loses interest, gets disengaged, and kind of does his shenanigans and doesn't really end up being a great, you know, a good NBA player. So, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, they talk him up, and we'll see what happens, because you're not a big fan of Lance, so I have to defend him, I guess, because I think he's going to be decent this season. But, you know, you hope that he can be what, like even two-thirds, I didn't use nines this time, two-thirds of what Manu Ginobili was, that's a pretty successful kind of path for him.
I agree, and I think in more minutes he might be able to have more of an impact and higher than what I would have thought at first, which is great. But, you know, I'm still skeptical how useful he'll be, just because the last 2.5 seasons have not shown him being the best. But, again, maybe now with more minutes and with more motivation and with the ball in his hands more, you know, maybe it'll go a little better.
Yeah, so what other media topics were out there that you wanted to discuss?
I think this isn't really media day. This is from the day after media day. But when they had their first practice, did you see Scott Agnes release the lineups they were running with in practice?
I did not actually see that. I'm going to go check
Okay, so Glenn Robinson was not injured at this point, but the second unit was Joseph, Stephenson, Glenn Robinson, TJ Leaf, Sabonis. So no Al Jefferson in the second unit, which was pretty noteworthy to see TJ Leaf already have supplanted Al Jefferson on the second unit. And the third unit, which you aren't as interested in this as me, but I like to know who these bottom of the roster guys are going to be. The third unit was Joe Young, Damian Wilkins, Poythress, Utoff, and Al Jefferson. So the two guys there who are from the bottom of the roster that are trying to make the team are Wilkins and Utoff. So just based on that report from Scott Agnes, I would guess that those are the two who are going to make the team. But that was pre-Glenn Robinson's injury, so who knows.
So do you think Jefferson then is like 100% healthy? I mean, like we know he had lingering issues all last season. Do you think that's why TJ Leaf's playing him, or think it's just you just think TJ Leaf is better than him?
That was odd because, you know, before I heard him lose 40 pounds and look really skinny, I would have said, yeah, he's just out of shape and he can't do it anymore. Now he looks like he's in shape and he's ready to go. So the fact that they put him down either means they really want to give TJ Leaf reps with these better players, or they really don't want Al Jefferson to play this year. And it's going to be odd to say.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this exhaustively because you love to talk about Al Jefferson, that we don't think he should be in the starting rotations or any rotation at all with the Pacers. So it'll be interesting to see if TJ Leaf actually, it's kind of a jump for a guy that's the 18th pick if he just starts in the rotation from the start of the season. Because even the guy I know Turner was hurt to start his career, but it's rare for picks that aren't top five, top 10 to really get into rotation minutes until like the 20 or 30 game mark before then.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see if that's how it actually shakes out, or if, you know, they go with Sabonis and Jefferson and then give Leaf like a tiny little run at the end before the starters come back in. But, you know, I thought that was a very interesting report from Agnes that they were running with those groups at practice.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm shocked by the Leaf thing. I'm not shocked by it. So, was it Joseph playing the one, or was it Stephenson playing the one?
It was it's the same. Like, they're both kind of combo guards. It's just like, it's not an actual title in that group. If you want to call it the one, you have to go defensively. Corey Joseph's going to guard the one. So I guess Corey Joseph's the one, but on offense, neither of them are. They're both kind of 2-1 hybrids.
Okay, but so you're probably right that when they're in the game, it'll be a mix of Stephenson and Joseph bringing up the ball. But it depends if the point guard is on a team, right? Because Stephenson could guard the point guard if he's a better player, because Stephenson's probably the better defender, especially if they're playing a team where the shooting guard is not as good as the point guard.
But he's – well, maybe not in that lineup, but he's a better wing defender too, and that's harder to get.
That's true. The problem with this whole thing is Glenn Robinson got hurt, and that's going to throw off, because he was also a decent defender, and he could guard wings. So it throws off everything that's going to happen. So it'll be interesting to see. We should probably follow this week to see what Agnes has to say about who's playing what – minutes, who playing what lineup this time, because this is real, it's how it's going to start whatever lineups they run this kind of week.
Yeah, it'll be really important this week to see who it is. And the fact that Poythress was the three on that third team is why I said his name earlier, the guy who could step in using his 2-day contract to get some time in that backup spot. So we'll have to see.
Yeah,
that was a poor report.
And the Pacers' first preseason game is actually this Wednesday, so it'll be interesting to see. Maybe, I mean, what's interesting to see is going to play. I don't know how many minutes all the players will play, but the kind of lineup they throw out there to start will be interesting to see, because it'll be the first post Glenn Robinson injury kind of like look on the team. And we have an idea what's going to happen, but I'm still kind of lost of what they might do.
Well, the preseason games will be particularly unique because all 20 guys can suit up for those, right? So, like, maybe Ben Moore gets a run at the three, and then Wilkins gets a run at the three, and then both of the Joneses get a run at the three, and Poitras gets a run at the three, and Leaf gets a run at the three. Like, it's all going to be a crazy experiment. They don't have a ton of time to evaluate these guys to see who they think they should keep around.
My guess is, though, they'll do, like, the first quarter, run their actual rotation. They think it's going to be, like, the 10 guys are going to run, or 9 guys now, whatever they said to run, and then the rest of the game will be experimenting.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? So I think the first quarter will be good to watch. Just we'll get an idea of what the actual rotation is going to look like.
Yeah, I agree. And then every single aspect of that game will be important in analyzing the team going forward.
Yeah. And so, you know, luckily they'll have the third preseason games, and they have like 10 days between the last preseason game and the start of the season, so they can probably make more adjustments then. But I keep going back to it. I mean, it's been the theme of this podcast, but Glenn Robinson being hurt just stinks. It just really, so really stinks.
Exactly. Yeah, probably like timeline wise for the Pacers going forward, the second most important guy who could have got hurt. So,
yeah, he's probably. I mean, on my level, my thought, he's probably the third or fourth best player on this Pacer team, depending on what you think of Bogdanovich. So,
yeah, he's up there. It's a real shame.
It is a real shame. So, well, do you have anything positive? So we don't end this podcast on a really sober note.
I'm excited for preseason starting this week. It's going to be very awesome.
Yeah. Basketball is back. It's back. It's been 3 months since the last NBA game. It's been like 4 or 5 months the last Pacer game. Basketball is finally back.
I watched Warriors Nuggets last night. I saw Nikola Jokic make some nice passes.
Oh, man. I
saw Lonzo Ball have a nice impact, even though his box score stats weren't that great. I saw Jamal Crawford shoot the ball through the backboard. You know, the NBA is back.
Yeah, I'm going to make two quick notes. Jokic won that pass. I saw it on Twitter. That behind the back, whatever.
Nasty.
Filthy pass. And Lonzo looks like an NBA player. I thought he didn't look – in college, he didn't. He looks stronger. Like, he's not wearing those little white T-shirts anymore because he actually has some arm strength. And his three-point shot is quick. It's coming out of his hand fast. He's been working his butt off this summer, like you can tell, to get in NBA shape. So it's going to be fun to watch those two guys, particularly because they're two of the young players that are going to be two of the future stars in the league.
Yeah, they were both very exciting, and they were good games. The Warriors shot like something crazy awful, like 4 for 30 from three, which was so weird to watch, but it was cool. It was very fun.
Yeah, so just so people know, you know, you might want to look into buying tickets when the Nuggets come to Bankers Life Fieldhouse in December on SeatGeek. Yeah. And I don't know when the Lakers come to Bankers Life. That one's in Los Angeles. They come to Bankers Life in March. Oh, that's actually my spring break, so I might buy a ticket. If I come home that week, that's the Monday my school restarts. Never mind. But whatever. But you might want to look into buying it to those two things. So just NBA is back. Be excited, because football has been so boring this year. So get excited. I know, and I'm excited because I love the NBA, and I can't wait to actually like be able to just to turn on a game on Tuesday and Thursday nights on TNT, those type of things. It's great to be able to just watch a basketball game during the week. There aren't a lot of sports during the week that I like to watch right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I would highly recommend getting tickets to that Nuggets game, because you'll see Gary Harris and Jokic, and they're just exciting guys.
Yes, they are. So that's a positive note ending our podcast.
If you want to buy tickets to that game, use the code LONBA on SeatGeek.
Yep. And so before we actually sign off, I wanted to just show out the schedule for the listeners out there. So as you noticed this past, I think now it's going on 2 weeks, we posted 4 podcasts 2 weeks ago and 5 podcasts this previous week. And so now we're going to, I think, do about 4 or 5 a week, basically from now until Thanksgiving. We sort of plan out a schedule to now until Thanksgiving. Then we'll reevaluate and see where we're at, because see what the listeners are liking, what people are liking and not liking. But basically this week we're going to have this podcast, which you should be listening to on this Monday. Then we're going to have a Jefferson on Tuesday. Tony, who are you bringing on Wednesday for your one-on-one?
His name's Tim. He is a collegiate scout and a film room expert for the Lakers, who's really in tune with the plays that teams run, and I want to go through some of the sets that the Pacers might run on offense this year.
All right. Yeah, so that should be a great listen. I'll listen to that. I would listen to all our podcasts, but that's just me. But that should be a great listen. Then we have a Glenn Robinson the third. failed to mention Al Jefferson. I actually spoke to Doug Benson. He's the Locked On Hornets guy. He was great. I mean, we talked about Jefferson for a solid 30, 35 minutes and just talked about everything that Jefferson could possibly be for the team, everything he probably won't be for the team. And then Glenn Robinson, I'm bringing on Tom Lewis, the editor-in-chief of 8.9 Seconds. We were going to record it earlier, but then once he got hurt, we decided we're going to wait. We waited and record it tomorrow. So we'll talk about his injury, obviously, and we'll try to evaluate where Glenn Robinson will go from here. And then I think Friday, Tony, you're going to do kind of one of the fringe roster player previews, maybe?
I'll probably just do all of them in one, just because, you know, EK, Joe Young, and whoever the heck else you want to talk about might not have the biggest impact this year. EK in the future, definitely we'll have to do episodes for, but this year, probably not.
Yep, and so that's this week. And then the following week, we are going to probably do four podcasts, because we'll do one after the first preseason game live. After, not the first, the last preseason game, we'll do a live one. That way we'll have evaluated the team for three games to kind of know what's going on. Then we're going to launch our update thing, our kind of 10, 12, maybe 15-minute podcast, and then do a one-on-one on Thursday and another update on Friday. So that's kind of our next 2 weeks going forward. I know it's a lot to listen to right now, but just, you know, be ready to, you know, have your iTunes out. You know, every day there's going to be something to listen to about the Pacers. You know, I hope to listen to every single one. I understand that people are busy out there, but just, I know if you're interested in the Pacers and you're ready for the NBA season, we're going to get you ready for the Pacers season. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. We're so close. It's the right month. It's October.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, this is me and Tony's first year taking over the Locked On Pacers podcast, and I'm excited to really just blow it out. I think we're gonna see a big jump in our audience once the season starts, in my opinion. So
tell your friends about us.
Yep, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your coworkers, tell anybody you think likes the Pacers. Just tell them, listen to it, because there aren't many Pacer podcasts out there, and I'm biased, but this, I think, is one of the best ones, just because the amount of content that we can do, and just, you know, Tony and I know so many people in Pacers Twitter land and Pacers that just love the Pacers, love to talk about the Pacers. So, and we love to hear back from you. So, you know, leave us feedbacks on iTunes and comments on Audio Boom and whatever you can, obviously, to make us do better. But that's it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Thank you for listening to it, and have a great rest of your day. You're lost in the-